Meanwhile, back at the Hall of Justice, our mild-mannered podcasters were bombarded by gamma rays, bitten by radioactive bugs, mutated by toxic waste, irradiated with cosmic rays, born into a world that doesn't understand them.
Hey everybody, what is going on? It's March 20th, 2019, otherwise known as New Comic Book Day, and welcome to the Talking Comics Podcast. You're listening to episode number 382. I am your host, Steve Say, and joining me this week are Mr. Bob Ryer.
Where in the world is Joey Petrino?
Jessica's here too.
Hi, I can't follow that. How do we ever follow you?
It always sucks to go last.
I can't follow that.
It's Sarah's off week, and Joey is not with us this week. And all right, so look, here it is. We talked to him not too long ago, and he said it was cool. He signed under NDA, but he's allowed to talk about it a little bit. So he's been telling everybody that he's gone to Seattle for some conference. He's given us permission to tell you that that is not the case. You're gonna guess the studio anyway, so it's not like we can hide that. But Joey is meeting with a movie studio because they've optioned his one-man show of Solomon Grundy, Born on a Monday.
Yes.
Woohoo!
So there it is. There you have it. Well, when he comes back, we'll let him give you more details about what's going on and whatnot. I don't know what we can and can't say. So,
are rumors about who's going to do the musical score. There's going to be some extras and whatever, but yeah, we can't.
Didn't mention anything. Yeah. When he comes back, we'll let you, him tell you all about it. And, for now, we hope that you're having a good time, Joey, and, good luck with everything. All right. Let's talk about dentistry. Let's talk about dentistry for just a minute here. If I seem a little out of sorts or if I talk a little oddly, it's because yesterday I went in for some dental work, and I cleared a tank of nitrous oxide while in the chair. I was in there for a while, and let me tell you something. I don't like going to the dentist, so nitrous oxide is one of the only things that can calm me down. But as somebody who had a grand old time in his college days, I remember what it's like to kind of like be there and where like nitrous oxide takes you. That's a fantastic feeling. I enjoy it. It's enlightening for me to an extent, so long as it's controlled and respected and all of those things. Here's the thing. You don't give somebody a head full of nitrous oxide and then don't change the channel before you do dental surgery on their tooth and put them in front of the news. So, like, while I'm trying to enjoy myself, no music in the room, by the way, no Pandora, no headphones, no nothing. So I'm at the mercy of whatever's happening on this muted screen. And it's like fires and rapes and shootings and Trump and like all this.
I hate to laugh at that. I'm sorry.
No, but like I'm sitting there while they're drilling and doing their thing, and I'm just like, I can't. If I open up my eyes, it's a fresh horror. Like I can't cope with this right now. So anyway, I'm still kind of coming off of the effects of everything. I feel a little nauseous. So if I get a little out of sorts, that's the reason why. The other thing that we want to talk to you about before we get to comic books, because we have plenty of those as well. We also have your Captain Marvel movie reactions to read from last week. And we have some awesome listener questions. We put the word out earlier in the week and really got some fun ones back. So we're going to hit those up for sure after we get through our books for the week. Before we jump into lightning rounds, though, Jess, I am very much interested in hearing about the Leprechaun St. Patrick's Haunted House.
Yeah, yeah. My girlfriends and I went to a St. Patrick's Day themed haunted house on Saturday night. Yeah, it was very interesting. The whole thing was that you were supposed to get this gold, right? And when you went into the haunted house, you were supposed to give these leprechauns your gold to get out of the haunted house. That was like the whole like thing. They had like announced it. It was expensive. We went. It was like super expensive. It included dinner. Like we sat down and ate. It was lovely. Yeah. We had a lovely dinner beforehand, and we go into this haunted house, and there's no gold, right? They don't have any of this gold. So the whole like thing for this, the whole like plan for this haunted house is kind of off. And you could totally tell it the entire time. Pretty much what they did was put like leprechaun hats on all of the scary things in this haunted house that is already pre-existing. Yes. And then they had these people dressed up as leprechauns, but they were still trying to do their like, give me your gold like thing. But we had no gold. So in one hallway, there was just a guy following us like, give us your gold. And we're like, we don't have gold, but like, you know, this like you work here. Yeah. And he was just like oddly following behind us. So it made the whole experience really bizarre. And it was just weird leprechauns like following you, even though you had no gold. The entire time.
That sounds awful.
It was so terrible. It was really funny. Like we were dying. So we're in his haunted house, like crying, laughing. And they're like, you're not supposed to be laughing. We're like, well, it's funny. We're sorry. Like, what are we supposed to do? Like one actor like wasn't even trying. He was like, hey. And like,
hey.
Yeah. And we like walked past.
Hey,
so
girl.
Yeah. They really, I mean, I won't call out where it was. They're pretty substantial. They're always a haunted house. Like, so they have like all different events and they're like one of the biggest ones on the island. And it was really comical. It was just a bunch of leprechauns walking around asking for gold that we couldn't give them.
They could have totally gone in like a Warwick Davis leprechaun
kind of thing.
Some
things
Jennifer Aniston lookalikes going.
Well, that was the thing. They had like one room and it was just like vampire, like fake vampires, like with leprechaun hats on.
That is just bizarre and obtuse enough to be interesting.
It was, and that's what it was. That's what it became. Like we were so like we were crying, laughing by the time we were done with it. We were
gold?
Blah blah blah. Top of the morning to you.
Yeah. Pretty much that's what was happening. There were these actors like walking around like, I want the gold. We're like, come on, guys, at least change it up. Like, you know there's no gold. Like, change up your spiel here. Like,
I hope those are clovers and not garlic. And now, blah.
Thing is, like, you know, for me, now I went with myself, my little sister, and my brother's wife, and we all run a haunted house.
Awesome.
You know? You know
the game.
We know the game. We were like, come on, guys. Like, come on. Like, give us a little bit more. Like, we were really excited about it.
Are you not having a good time?
And yeah, and all the guys were really mad because it was a girls' night and we went out with no men and they weren't allowed to come with us. And they were like, we want to go to the haunted house. But you guys are all going to go by yourselves. Like,
oh, they
you guys
wanted to go to the sweet St. Patrick's haunted house.
And we came home. We were like, yep, well, you weren't missing out on much.
The leprechaun vampires.
The leprechaun. Yeah, it was just so bizarre. There was like a couple, you could tell like this stuff is always up. And they literally just had like, you know, like the cheap dollar store necklaces with like the green. Green that like glow. Yeah, that's what was
episode
all over.
Title is totally going to be something about nitrous oxide with vampire leprechauns.
So yeah, that was my St. Patrick's Day experience with leprechauns in a leprechaun haunted house.
That sounds that, you know, I've come around to the idea. I think at the end of this story that it was actually pretty good.
It was a lot of fun, not for the reasons that they wanted it to be fun though. You know?
Yeah, but it's gonna, you know what, it's a memory, it's gonna stay with you.
Is.
I know it's gonna stay with me.
Oh yes.
And you're gonna go back next year and I'm coming.
Yeah, Bob, we'll definitely go back. I guess you could definitely come.
All right.
So, yeah.
Before we move forward, Bob, are you possibly sitting away from your mic a little bit?
No.
Yeah, you sound very low.
Yeah, you sound a little farther than usual.
Okay, how about now?
There you go. Hey.
Okay.
Can you eat your microphone, please? Can you put it in your mouth? Thanks.
I'm moving it a little close. Is it really bad? Really,
now,
really
now
bad.
You sounded right like you were a ways.
Okay. How about now?
You sound better? Right now, yeah.
Okay, good.
All All right. All right, so why don't we get into some lightning rounds? Aw, man, it's not fun when Joey's not here. And when nobody else joins in, so
you were too fast for us.
There we go.
Is that good? Did we do
better? Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Friends. Okay. Bob, you have 5 minutes on the clock. Go.
First up, I was lent a lovely children's book by my friend Angela's daughter Diana, and yes, she is named after Wonder Woman. The book is from Marvel Press, and it's entitled What Makes a Hero, and it's written by Pamela Bobowish with paintings by Ida Caban. And it's a lovely celebration of Marvel's heroines with great messages delivered by each of these ladies, and the roster includes Captain Marvel, Shuri, Nadja, Black Widow, Okoye, Pepper Potts, Peggy Carter, Valkyrie, and even Maria and Monica Rambeau. If you have a little one in your life, this book is a gem and a must-buy. Next up, speaking of Wonder Woman, it's Wonder Woman number 66 by G. Willow Wilson with art by, well, no, I'll get to that later. Anywho, the issue continues the investigation into the disappearance of Themyscira and the appearance of gods and other mythical creatures on Earth. This time, in the form of two gigantic stone titans battling in the Rocky Mountain forest. Even Wonder Woman herself might need some backup on this one. So she calls on the often villainous Giganta to help save the day, and maybe more. Wonderfully fun and touching story, but I must say that I believe the really deep emotional moments aren't served as well by Carrie Nord and Mick Gray's art as they could be. In fact, I think they undercut the best moment in the book, something fierce. It's not terrible. It's just kind of pedestrian. We need more. Jess and I, we'll talk. We'll all talk.
Yeah.
Now, to a book where the art isn't a problem and which gets a special boost this time around, we have Unbeatable Squirrel Girl number 42, their 50th anniversary issue. With artist Naomi Franquez, Derek Charm, and yes, Erica Henderson, each taking an era. Ryan Nord's story features that evil time-traveling warlord Kang the Conqueror trying to stop three different versions of Squirrel Girl from foiling his nefarious plans of world conquest. Can even the unbeatable Squirrel Girl subdue a villain who can reset the clock after each defeat? You'll laugh, you'll groan at bad puns, and you may even grow a bit wistful, as this is a very, very special issue. That's it for me.
You have 2.5 whole minutes left.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't read a whole lot of books this week. Do you want me to talk about... Well, yeah.
Here, let's talk about stuff. We can cut in. We've got some opinions. Jess, why don't you talk about... you guys hash out Wonder Woman 66, and then I'm going to gush about Unbeatable Squirrel Girl.
Okay. So yeah, with the art, with Bob was saying, it's very pedestrian. I think that it's lacking for the book. I think her writing's really strong it is hilarious. I love G. Willow Wilson's sense of humor when she has the Pegasus say Zeus's thighs. I like cried. I was like crying laughing. There's a bunch of stuff in that book. It's such clever humor. It's really funny. You know, the writing's really good and the story's really good. And like you said, like I think that the art just really lacks the emotion needed for this book. And I hate to say that. I hate to put anything down, especially art. It makes me feel really bad. But yeah.
I mean, I'm looking at it right now and I there are definitely some faces in just kind of like going through the issue, but like the environments are cool. The rock monsters are cool.
Yeah. They're
some
very...
of the action sequences. I don't think it's as bad. I definitely wouldn't describe it as pedestrian.
I don't know. But what I'm saying is like what you're saying with the faces, that's what it's lacking. It's lacking
emotion
in that face. And that's where I think, you know, it's a little, the faces are rough.
Yeah, there are definitely a couple of them. I'm thumbing. I keep thumbing through and I'm finding more and more of them. There are definitely a few faces in this. Anyway, Bob, go ahead.
Right. If you're going to go completely stylized, Dexter Soy, great. That's what everything would be. But we have, as you say, nice backgrounds and wonderful panel layouts in a way that sometimes what's in the foreground doesn't match what's in the background. And there's one moment between I don't want to spoil it. There's a moment between Wonder Woman and one of the other characters where she's telling of her inner moments, and she's completely in silhouette. We don't even see Wonder Woman's face. It's like, well, that's an odd choice. And the person in the background isn't really reacting. It's like, this is the moment in the book. This is a panel that should rock the book. And it just doesn't quite. Again, it is not bad.
It's not bad.
It's not terrible. It's not like, oh, I'm not going to buy this book because of the art. But again, I said to Jess off air, we come off of Rucka's Run, which was Liam Sharp and Nicholas Scott. What Shea Fontana was doing with her various arts, Mirka Gandolfo did one, and we had all these wonderful people on the book. And we've been, the art, because of the twice monthly, has been a mishmash, and some better than others. Zermonico did the last few issues, I thought was certainly the high point so far. I'd like to see more of his work. It's just because G. Willow Wilson's work is so great on this series that I want the art to match her level, which is going to be tough because she's at the top of her game here. I think twice monthly, it gets you into these binds. That's all.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't want to say it's bad. It's not bad. But like when you're having a conversation, like me and Bob were having a conversation, and I'm like, well, I'm not going to, you know, I'll deal with the art for this book. Like, you shouldn't have to, I don't want to, you know, I don't want to have to deal with it. I mean, and it's not bad. It's just, I don't think it's the level where it should be. Like,
it's cool if it's not grooving.
I know.
For you.
It's, I know,
totally, where you're among friends. It's all good.
You know me. Yeah, I feel bad. I don't like to be mean. I don't like to be mean ever.
It's because they're all listening.
Nothing.
Really, honestly, though, it's the one time that I do say something mean that they will be listening and they'll be like, "How dare you?" It seems to be, you know.
How dare you?
That's the way I feel about it. I really, no, it's not bad. Like the Big Titans, they were phenomenal. Yes. I think whoever, you know, I think that's more their strong point. That looked great. Like you said, the panel layout's good. It's just like the emotion in the faces. Like you said, that one thing, the person behind it just has like kind of like a mannequin smile on. It's not really conveying the story that's happening, you know.
Do you often wonder if, like, I'd be very curious to learn, when they're making comics, if you make a face that you don't like, if you draw something that you don't like, are you able to do it over again? Like, I know, like, digitally you can move stuff around.
Well, yeah, I would assume that's what penciling is for. And then
you have erasers before it's inked.
I had a point, but I'm already losing the thread of it. Like I said, my brain's a little mushy from yesterday, so I totally had a point. Let's just pretend that I made it and move forward.
Point taken.
Tell us about Squirrel Girl, Steve.
Okay. Go ahead, guys. It is, in my opinion, my expert opinion, that this is one of the, at least the top five, maybe even top, let's go with the top five, issues of The Unbeatable Squirrel Girl. I am amazed by how much story Ryan North is able to cram into just one issue of this comic. Like, it feels like you're reading a graphic novel every time that it comes out. And this was like a one and I would assume it's a one and done issue. You would think so, right, Bob?
Yes.
Okay. I just thought the plotting for it was spectacular. I love the way that she can't be beat. Like, she really is the unbeatable Squirrel Girl. You know, and it's just, it was so funny. Kang was ridiculous. I love the three different generations all teaming up and how that all ties together in the end. And like the way that it leaves you with this warm, gooey feeling. And it's just such an amazing book. You know, like when I did my read of this, like my definitive all the way through Squirrel Girl for the best of shows, I really grew to have a new appreciation for the character.
Aww.
And ever since then, it's just been wonderful. But I mean, this issue was a knockout. Like, I don't want to say too much more about it because I want people to go out and read it for themselves, but it's a really, really great example of how you can tell a really great and complete story within a finite period of time. You know, a one-off, a single issue story. I thought it was great. I was like, oh, I can't go into the podcast now with Bob talking about Squirrel Girl because I'm not going to want to listen, but I do want to listen. So I stayed up and I read it, and it just I went to bed with the biggest smile on my face because that book is just so, so good.
Here's the thing with Kang. Steve Englehart, who wrote The Avengers many, many years ago, had this whole idea that, you know, Kang should be this unbeatable villain because he can just keep showing up. He can lose to you and show up 5 minutes after and start again and start again. And that's part of what's going on here. He keeps trying to find his way around the fact that Doreen is truly unbeatable, no matter when or where. And it's for all the special reasons that she is that makes the book work. It is, as you say, there's warm, gooey stuff. There's tons of puns. The book is just something special. And I am so glad you did the reread. I'm so glad that Sarah got the Ladies of Valhalla to do the graphic novel.
Oh, God.
That I think got everybody on that side of the page on board as well. It is just a book that deserves more and more attention, and just enjoy.
Yeah, people. Like if you're looking to get a taste of Unbeatable Squirrel Girl because you've heard us talk about it for so long and you just don't know if you want to dive in, it's a really good issue to pick up to get your feet wet and see if you like the humor and you like the delivery of the story and stuff like that. And it was really awesome having, like, along with the three different generations of Squirrel Girl artists on the book. I thought that was really clever. It was great to see Erica Henderson back on the book. And I've really come around to the other artists as well. I laughed my ass off. Spoilers. There's a building that falls on Doreen at one point. Yeah. And the panel where she, like, emerges from the rubble, she looks hilarious. Like, I don't know that I've seen her, like, kind of beaten up too much, or at least it's been a while, and I forgot how funny she looks when she's all like haggard and, you know, dizzy and whatever, and then she's pissed. So but in a nice way, because that's just who she is. Anyway, Squirrel Girl number 42, issue number 50, pick it up.
They will apparently have another issue 50 celebration 8 months from now, so
that's
be ready.
So great. That's so great. I hope that book goes forever. I really do. That's another one. That's become one of those books that if Ryan North, or when Ryan North announces that he's leaving the book, I will be very sad. I will be so sad. But that may not happen,
right?
And yes, we'll just lock him in somewhere and tell him you have to keep making Squirrel Girl issues. Yeah. Jess, do you want to do a lightning round?
Sure. Mine is also short this week, too. It wasn't a big week. It was a weird week.
Well, I will borrow y'all's time because I have plenty to talk about. I did a lot of reading this past week. All right, I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock for you. Go.
Sure. My first books that I got to read were Songs for the Dead by Vault Comics, and that's written by Andrea Fort and Michael Christopher, art by Sam Beck. What do you think of when you hear the word necromancer? Some dark, sinister creature with the power to raise an undead army? Well, normally you would be correct. In Songs for the Dead, we meet Bethany, a young brat of sorts, looking for new adventures. During her travels, she stumbles across a small town's notice board and picks up a flyer to find a young boy who had gotten lost in the forest. Unfortunately for the young boy, he did not survive his adventure. But Bethany is more than just a sweet young minstrel. She's a necromancer!
Ba-ba-bum.
Dun-dun. With her special power of reanimation, she brings a young boy back to life to find out how he met his demise. But what she doesn't expect is the crazy journey she will have to embark on once she finds out his secrets. This book is perfect for anyone who loves RPGs, fantasy, and a little bit of a twist on the typical necromancer class. Fort and Christopher have set up a wonderful fantasy world that Sam Beck has brought to life with beautiful illustration. As the story goes on, it includes a great cast of characters that are plucked right from your favorite RPGs and really makes the story come alive. Side note, there are magical dead animals, so you know that's a win for me.
Yeah.
Right now, there are only 4 issues of the series, but keep your eyes open in the previews because it was just announced that it will come back for this summer. Next book I got to read on Bob's recommendation, and apparently it is Kids Week here at Talking Comics, yeah, is Hex Vets, which is screening. A few weeks ago, while I was talking about Hex Wives, Bob had told me about this adorable little book with some cute witches and a little purple dragon on the cover. Needless to say, it went on the to-read list, and I am so happy it did. Oh. Hex Vet, which is in training, is a debut original graphic novel from acclaimed cartoonist Sam Davis. In this magical story, we meet 2 young apprentice veterinarians, Nan and Clarion, learning how to care for all kind of mystical creatures. On one seemingly normal day, their teacher and head vet had to run out on a call to deliver a litter of manticores, which kind of like little like lion tiger birds. They were adorable. While going through their normal routines, Clarion finds a strange purple-eyed rabbit. What she doesn't know is this rabbit has the power to hypnotize other animals and starts to enchant all the other animals in their care, using their smarts and trusting their instinct. All while learning how to accept yourself for who you are, the 2 young witches, Nan and Clarion, work together to save the animals and stop the magical catastrophe from spreading. This book is for anyone that A, has young kids and wants to give them a sweet little book with a great positive message, or B, if you're a grown adult like me who loves feel-good kids books with magical creatures in it. The art in this book is just as cute as the story. The vibrant colors are adorable, and the magical creatures make this book truly eye-catching. Each page is colorful and exciting. It tells a great story without being too wordy, which I think is perfect for the younger reader. I also love the back matter, where they go into detail about how comics are created, and specifically how this comic itself was creating, giving a step-by-step from idea to completed work. Thank you again, Bob, for the heads up on this one. I'm pretty sure I will be gifting this a few times in the near future.
Yeah, well, let me pass that thanks along to Menachem up at Escape Pod Comics. I was trying to buy for Diana, who I mentioned earlier, and what do you get for an 8-year-old? She likes this and this and this that isn't the typical thing, and he picked that one out. And I glanced through it as you did and saw all the lovely creatures, the layout. It's messagey, but not preachy, which is great. It all just happens as it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I need to get one for myself, too.
Yeah, you should.
Is the thing, yeah.
Yeah, you should. It was really sweet. It was just a really sweet, like, made me feel good throughout the day. I was like, this is adorable. Like, I squeed really hard through the whole thing.
Oh, great.
So, yeah. Thanks, Bob.
My pleasure.
Aw.
Aw.
That sounds awesome, actually.
It was pretty awesome, not gonna lie.
I think there's a second and third one in the planning stages as well.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Were you a Dr. Doolittle fan, Jess?
Oh, when it came out when I was a kid? Yeah, of course. He talked to animals. It's my, like, life's dream. Are you kidding me?
That's what I want to do when I grow up.
All I want to do when I grow up is talk to... Listen, if I talk to my dogs now. They don't talk back, but I talk to them all the time.
They're talking back. You just can't understand.
Not yet. They're probably ignoring me. They're like, oh, my God, lady, shut up.
Her
shut
again.
Up. Yeah.
All right, here we go. I'm going to put 5 minutes on the clock for me. Probably going to go over. We'll find out. Are you guys ready?
We're ready.
Okay, you were real quiet.
Real ready.
Ooh. Here we go. Little Bird, #1. Created by Ian Bertram and Darcy Van Polgeest. Art by Ian Bertram, colors by Matt Hollingsworth, letters by Aditya Bidikar, and design by Ben Didier. There we go, names. Near the Rocky Mountains of Canada, there's a peculiar tribe looking to defend their land from the new Vatican of the United States of America.
Ooh.
As a new and twisted leader approaches the throne, the tribe's last hope for victory lands squarely on the shoulders of a young woman named Little Bird. With a map in hand and her mission clear, Little Bird goes in search of the Axe, a warrior of legend being held prisoner in a complex facility. It's all up to Little Bird. The only problem is, she's going to die. So there's my elevator pitch for Little Bird. For those of you who don't recall, Ian Bertram was the artist on Peter J. Tomasi's House of Penance.
Mm-hmm.
That is kind of a house favorite around here, if you will. There are definitely pangs of House of Penance in this, for sure. It is a fantasy story about land being taken away from its rightful owners for the gain of government and religion. So imagine that, like, gothic horror bent applied to that
eminent
kind of
domain.
Subject matter.
Yeah, right.
Right. So it plays very much like an extended and continuing episode that you'd find on MTV's Liquid Television from back in the day. Like, I could
love
totally,
Liquid Television.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I could totally see this being on Liquid Television. It is Headlopper meets Terry Gilliam's Brazil meets Woo! Shaolin Cowboy. It's really, really, really good, and I highly recommend that y'all check it out.
Ongoing,
I don't know why I'm saying y'all so
y'all.
Much.
Y'all.
This is my problem.
Y'all.
Yar.
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 All right. So I got to give a thank you to so many of our listeners before I talk about this next book, because for years, people have been telling me, you should read The Champions. You got to read Champions. Champions is so good. And I was like, yeah, I'll get to it. It's great. I finally decided to read Champions. I read the first issue of the new arc that's coming out right now. And I really dug it, but I was like, man, I have all this other Champion stuff. I probably should read that. So I ended up reading volumes 1 through 3 and the next novel in the series, which is Champions and Avengers. And it's a mixed bag, but it's written by Mark Waid, pencils by Umberto Ramos, inks by Victor Olazaba, colors by Edgar Delgado, and letters by VC's Clayton Cowles. So, fed up with the never-ending hero-against-hero shenanigans of the Avengers, Kamala Khan forms the Champions, a superhero team made up of Ms. Marvel, Viv Vision, Nova, Amadeus Cho, the totally awesome Hulk, Miles Morales, and a young Scott Summers of the X-Men. Throughout their adventures, the Champions battle the following. And this is one of the reasons why it's one of my favorite books that I've read in a while, is because they don't just go up against big name villains or just villains in general. They go against Pagliacci, the human trafficking clown. They go up against the Taliban, crooked cops, social media trolls, a villain for hire group called the Freelancers, Ant-Man. And last but certainly not least, every young person's arch nemesis, new and strange biological urges. Absolutely fell in love with this book. There is one issue, it's in the second issue, where they're sitting around a campfire and they're basically talking about the idea of forming a team and how they're going to do it. And so they want to, you know, familiarize everybody with each other's powers. So the vast majority of the issue is just everybody showing off what they can do. And at one point, the Hulk, they're like, how high can you jump? And so he leaps off the ground and he's gone for like 7 to 8 pages. And then finally lands all these panels later, and it's just a riot. Another thing that I positively loved about this was that after reading her in Tom King's Vision, I missed Viv Vision, and I really wanted to read a book with her in it, and I was very, very pleased to see that at least 3 to 4 of the arcs that I read, she is more or less the central character of the story. There's a lot going on with her, and she is just written so beautifully, and she's so much fun, and all of her dialogue is so clever, and I love kind of following her story as she continues to wrestle between searching for humanity and remaining a part of her father's machine. There's all this stuff going on with Vision. He's kind of a parental figure that comes around the Champions every now and again and kind of poops on their parade a little bit because he's afraid of what's going on with Viv. The two of them, ever since the events of Vision, have removed portions of their like emotional core.
Aww.
Because of what went down in that book. And it's affected them in some really cool ways, to tell really cool and emotional arcs with those two characters. Kamala's great. All the interplay and banter between the teammates is absolutely fantastic. Wade is knocking it out of the park with this one, in my opinion. And Jim Zub takes the book over around volume 4. I've only read two issues of that so far, but I mean, the book doesn't skip a beat. It's same humor, same kind of tone. And in the newest one, they're kind of like they're taking on global warming of all things. So, yeah, like it's neat. Like it's a really cool super team, but they're going after these other things, you know, and like the Champions is a movement throughout the world. And there are people that watch them on social media. And at one point, like the freelancers frame them for something and people start hating them on social media and it gets into their heads and Kamala can't lead the group anymore because she sees what everybody's saying about them. And I mean, these are things that like if you were a teenager in a superhero group, you would be concerned about these things.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be devastating to your group and to your brand. And this book like tells that story. Whether you're interested in that or not, I don't know, but I found it to be very refreshing and very cool and very now. And yeah, I mean, it's a different kind of superhero book. I really loved it. So the new stuff is cool too. Like I said, I've only read one issue of that, but the first couple of volumes are stellar and I highly recommend them. So thank you to everybody that's recommended that to me on occasion. I appreciate it. I really had a lot of fun. And honestly, like Vision is hands down one of my new favorite characters probably ever. Her stuff in that series is just fantastic. So I want a book with her and Valeria.
There you go. Yeah, my buddy at the store, James, always talks about it, Bob. You've heard him talk about Champions before. So when you're saying that, I'm like, oh, God, I've told him I've read it, and I have not read it myself either, because he was always like, why haven't you read this? And then I'm like, I don't know, I didn't.
Well, you have access to my stuff. Go and read the first volume of Mark Waid's stuff and see if you're not hooked by the end of that. It really scratches that itch, that kind of, like, West Coast Avengers young millennial teen you know superhero drama and action and weirdness and just really really cool dynamics and relationships happening in the book. You know, the characters really complement one another, and there's a lot of good stuff to be had in my professional opinion.
4 out of 5 doctors recommend.
That's
4 out of 5 Steve's recommend Champion.
Alrighty. So that's 3 lightning rounds down, which means it's everybody's favorite time for open discussions.
We need music for that. We need a sound effect. Like an opening vault door. No.
Alright.
Now that there's 7 different opening sounds for it.
Pick your own and we're good to go.
All right. While we're talking about Champions and Kamala Khan, might as well move into the magnificent Ms. Marvel #1, written by Saladin Ahmed, art by Mingyu Zheng, inks by Juan
Blasco.
Blasco. Thank you. I thought that was an I. I can't see past my microphone. Sorry about that. colors by veteran Ms. Marvel colorist Ian Herring, and letters by VC's Joe Carmanga.
Nicely done.
Thanks. Lovely. Not my best, but it'll do. All right. Now that G. Willow Wilson has retired from the Kamala storytelling business, pour one out, it's time for Saladin Ahmed to take Jersey's embiggening protector to new and magnificent heights. kill me. When last we left Kamala, her secret was out amongst her close-knit group of friends, as well as her Ami, who, due to some ominous circumstances, has shared her daughter's superhero identity with someone who's bound to be disappointed in Kamala's extracurricular activities. Unfortunately for our hero, there's never much rest for the weary. And now that aliens have seemingly landed on the Jersey shore, Kamala's life is about to get even more complicated. So that's what's happening in issue #1. Bob, can we spoil the person that now knows?
Yeah, I think you should.
It's kind of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's at least half of
it. Yeah, it's important to it, I think.
Okay. So, and also because I want to talk about this. If you haven't read The Magnificent Ms. Marvel number one. Go read it.
Tune out for a couple of minutes and come back.
Yeah, tune out for a couple of minutes and come back. We are going to talk some spoilers. Okay. 3, 2, 1. There we go. So Kamala's Abu, her dad, now knows that she is Ms. Marvel, that she's been moonlighting as Ms. Marvel because Kamala's mother has told him so. It was time for her to stop lying to him and to confess. And so Kamala is understandably, she's very upset because she feels betrayed by her mom. She had just recently come out as Ms. Marvel to her friends. They all knew anyway. But, you know, it was a big step for her specifically. And so that's a lot to deal with. And that's a lot of people that are, you know, potentially in danger because they know your secret identity and you're a superhero and that doesn't always work out to the best. Anyway, I got the impression there seems to be some sense of urgency going on with the parents, and Kamala gets a 911 text and she's off to go and save the world and whatnot. And the parents look really dejected when she leaves because they had something important to tell her. Big spoilers, potential spoilers for Ms. Marvel. I don't know about you guys, but I have a feeling that Kamala's father he found out that he's sick.
Yeah, well, there's like an S. She goes to say it and it's like, your father's, and then they cut it off and she like runs off. So I'm assuming, I mean.
Scroll!
Unless he's sassy. I mean, he could be really sassy, but I don't think that's right. That they're going for.
I mean, I don't want to like, I definitely don't want to ruin like the end page twist. We won't go there, but I mean, this was a shocking development in and of itself. Cause not only do I love the character, but we might not have an answer for a month and I need to sleep at night. So
you need to know. You're one of those. You're like, I need to know now. What's wrong with him?
Right. All right. So I had a couple of bullet points right here and then we'll pass the talking stick around. I just want to say really quick, I absolutely loved the art. I thought the art was fantastic. I love that Ian Hearing is still on the book, that they're carrying him over to this new era of the character. Very, very smart move on Marvel's part to secure him for that and him to remain a part of the creative team. As a fan from the very beginning, I love that I've been reading comic books enough to notice the sea changes for like top tier characters that we've experienced, especially characters that have been introduced since the birth of this show, like Kamala Khan, Miles Morales, etc. And seeing G. Willow Wilson leave, like, as much as it breaks my heart, it's really a milestone that Saladin Ahmed is taking over the character, and this is like a whole new thing for Kamala, but it's using all the bits and pieces from her history because she is that important of a character. She is a main player in the Marvel universe. You know, she has her own solo adventures. She leads the champions over on that book. And now she's moving on to the Saladin Ahmed stuff. And I love watching the character grow, you know, and move on to other things. So anyway, that was a huge part of the book for me. I have Ms. Marvel colored glasses a little bit. But as I mentioned before, I also really like that more and more people know her identity. Because like I'd said, when you're a superhero and people know your identity, that can often put them in danger. I think eventually that's going to catch up with Kamala, and she's going to realize that maybe she needs to make a team with them down the road to possibly keep them like directly involved and in the know. Or who knows, maybe there'll be another Terrigen bomb. Thoughts, Jess, what do you have to say?
Yeah, no, I really liked it as well. And I, you know, I remember we were talking about this and being a little nervous, you know, because G. Will was leaving and it can go either way. You know, you never know. You never know what's going to happen. And I think it went the right way. I enjoyed it. I wasn't like taken out of it. It wasn't like, oh, this is a drastic change. You know, you could tell that it's a different writer, but like not in a bad way. So I did. I really enjoyed it. There was one part that I actually had to text because my Danny's, I call him Danny's work wife, Danny's best friend is an Indian guy. And his name is Jay, and he is lovely. And I had to send him because he sends me all the time. Like, we were invited to his birthday, but he was telling me, like, he's like writing it specifically. He's like, this is not brown people time. And that's what he says to me all the time. And there was actually a line in the book where she talks about adding 30 minutes on for brown people time. And I sent it to him and he was dying because that's really a thing. That's really something that he says to me all the time. He's like, I'll be there at 7 o'clock, which means 7:30 in brown people time. So it just cracked me up right away when I saw that. I like that little bit of like kind of inside humor because that is a real thing, apparently, that I got to experience from Jay. So I did like those little subtleties in the book. There was that humor still. Like you said, the colors are so great, the art's really good on it. So yeah, all in all, it was a big thumbs up. I was very pleasantly surprised and happy with it. So
indeed. I think I had kind of braced myself for a bit of a creator change as far as the writing is concerned, because I'd been reading The Champions with Wade and Zub writing the character for a little bit, so I had like a nice little massage before I dove into the new Ahmed era. Bob, what say you?
Look, it is a really tough gig following the person whose work defines a character. Someone had to follow Stan and Jack, and someone followed Siegel and Schuster, and it's a problem. I enjoyed this a lot, and while I did think there were a couple of rough patches in terms of the story that Mr. Ahmed is trying to tell, since I've enjoyed his work a lot, I'm not going to go nuts about a page or a panel or two that I think he'll find his voice for Kamala sooner rather than later. She's put in a tough position here that we've discussed with her parents, and she reacts a little more harshly than we've seen her react before, but then this is also a much bigger moment with them than she's ever experienced. In a way, being late for school or not coming to a family event is different than being called out about you can't be a superhero anymore. So I want to see how this plays itself out. I did enjoy it a lot. I thought the art was spectacular. As you both mentioned, having Ian Herring on board now for all the years of Kamala, it brings a continuity that it's familiar and lovely, but Miku Young's art is just different enough than some of what we've seen before as to be fresh and different. So enjoyed a lot with a couple of tiny reservations, but I think knowing Mr. Ahmed's work on things like Black Bolt and certainly Abbott, I think we're in really good hands. There's some nice things put into play here in terms of family, which is all what Ms. Wilson's run was about, family and friends. So that's all still a major part of this story. So for those people anticipating, oh, it's all going to turn into giant superhero battles, no, it's still some crazy stuff going on. It is still the neighborhood. It is still the Circle Q and Nakia and all the rest are still here. So give it a shot. If you bounced off this book, bounce back on real quick.
Yeah, I think there's potential to tell a really cool story in terms of her coming to grips with whatever's going on with her dad versus trying to be a superhero and not remain in her own head about him. Or maybe does she quit again because he doesn't want her to be Ms. Marvel and she wants to spend time with him? I don't know. Like, it'll be interesting. I think that's going to be the story, though. I think that battle between remaining as Ms. Marvel to honor his wishes versus doing what she needs to do as a superhero, I think that's where the story is going to go.
Yeah.
And I look forward to reading that. If I'm wrong, then I'm looking forward to reading whatever else he's got planned.
It's not a spoiler because the book opens with a father on a distant world in the far future telling his daughter about the hero who came from Earth, the destined one, as it were. And so the whole father-daughter thing, I think, starts to play out on the first panel of the first page.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. It's always interesting how they frame her story, but meanwhile you're with her in those panels and you're getting the real deal of it. And it's amazing how much we build up our heroes and maybe make them out to be more than they are in our stories from time to time. Didn't happen exactly like that. Anyway, let's see. What else do we got here? We got Assassin Nation, number one. Bob, do you want to take
number
this one?
Surely, surely. It is written by Kyle Starks, who is listed as creator and writer, and Erica Henderson, creator, artist, cover, letterer Duron Bennett, and it is from our friends at Image and Skybound. A man named Rankin, formerly the number one hitman in the world, I guess that's a good name for him, right? He's ranked. Apparently, and there's also a poll of such things. I didn't get to vote in that one. Well, he has a really big problem. Someone's trying to kill him. They failed three times, but they're getting closer. So he comes to a really interesting conclusion. What better way to keep himself safe than to hire a bunch of even better hitmen? He invites the top 20 to a parlay, and as you'd imagine, there's a lot of tension in the room, which eventually erupts in a Black League comedic ballet of over-the-top shenanigans. We have some incredible sound effects as people get shot through the head. I don't know if anyone noticed. Scanners'd and trauma'd.
I like trauma'd.
It's a deftly done bit of business on the story by Kyle Starks and paired with the inimitable stylings of Erica Henderson. I'd rank this first issue, wait for it, number one with a bullet. What does everyone else think?
Bob.
It reminded me of a Guy Ritchie film, kind of like Snatch.
Yeah. Good point.
For sure. It has that kind of quirk and kookiness to it. And a couple of surprises by the end. I really dig the setup. The characters, I want to learn more about them. I can't really feel anybody out too much because there were too many brains scattered about the room. But yeah, I mean, it's brilliantly staged and set up and everything. And I'm definitely up for reading another issue, seeing Erica Henderson on a more violent and action oriented book is also really cool. She's fantastic at telling this story so far, and I really look forward to seeing more from her. Now that the group is kind of pared down a little bit by the end, I think it'll be easier to get closer to some people in the book. Definitely cool though. You know, I didn't really know what to expect, and it ended up being a lot of fun. Jess, what'd you think?
Yeah. Pared down, I think, is a light way to put that.
Mowed down.
Mowed over. You know. But yeah, like you said, the setup is really brilliant. For me, this is not like a normal pickup for me. You know me. I'm reading like Fluffy Animals in the Forest. Okay, that's really.
If it was corgis with guns, you'd be there.
I'd be there. Like, you know what I mean. So this wasn't a normal pickup for me. But like, I saw you guys were reading it. I was like, You know me, I'll try pretty much anything, really. And it really, the setup is what kind of hooked me in it. It's not really my normal cup of tea, and there's a little bit more violence than I would normally go to. But like you said, it was like really interesting seeing Erica Henderson draw such a violent book coming, you know, off of, other things that are
squirrel
not. Squirrel Girl is a big, it's a huge change. But I thought it really worked well. Like, I thought her arc worked really perfectly with this. So yeah, I will definitely give number two a chance. I definitely want to know some more about some of these characters, like, you know, that are happening there. I don't want to give any spoilers, but there was one character that kind of pops up at the end that I was just like, yeah, you go. Like, I want to know more about that person, you know? And I really think it's all the setup. That was a great first issue hook me for the second. I think that's the way you do it. You know, it was a perfect setup and you're like, okay, now I want to know more. So, I think they executed that perfectly. It was great.
Fantastic. Any more thoughts about any of the books we've talked about?
Nope.
Yeah.
All right. And it's time for Jess's reaction to Captain Marvel.
Woo.
I feel weird because it's just me, but I loved it. I think it may be a little different sometimes for women of my age to kind of see this stuff happening, because like a lot of us kind of really never thought it would happen, you know. I'm not gonna lie, like some of these things I never thought would happen. And watching that movie, I went with Bob on a Sunday morning, and I sat next to Bob, and the two of us cried like half the movie. I think both of us cried together many times.
There was
so many, you know, so many scenes that were really touching. It was really good. I really liked her in it. I did not have a problem with her acting at all. I know some people are really criticizing her for being flat in some scenes, but I think she portrayed the character very well. Like, you know, that seriousness was supposed to be there sometimes. God, how dare she? You know, like how dare she be serious?
The nerve
of her, you know, like, yeah. I really, you know, I thought it was one of the better movies from Marvel I've seen in a little bit. Like, I liked it better than the last Avengers movie. I did. I'm sorry.
Better than Infinity War? I did.
I liked it. I like Infinity War. It's not bad, but I just, I don't know. But maybe, again, I will say maybe I am biased. This touched me a little bit. The moment I saw her fighting, spoilers. Yeah. The moment I saw her fighting to I'm Just a Girl, I'm in tears. Like I sat down with like my sister-in-law and my girlfriend Amory, and like we both all talked about like how important that song is. Like that's important to women. Like that song is very important. And to see her just like kicking ass while that song played, like I can get emotional right now talking about it. And I thought it was well done. I thought the score was great. You know, I'd like to see it again. I've only gotten to see it once. And like
I'll
I said,
go again. I'll go.
Yeah,
again.
I know you will, Bob. I figured Bob would come with me again. You know, and like I said, I spent half the time with a napkin with Bob. So. You know, poor Dan was sitting next to me and Bob crying.
You should have sat him right between the two of you.
Just the two of us crying on Dan's shoulder. But no, but you know, and I will say he told me, I will speak for him, he loved the movie as well. And, you know, he thought it was just as powerful. And, you know, I that's my opinion on it. I thought it was a great movie. I did marry. Yeah. He's a good guy. He really is. He's a saint. And he married me. He's got to deal with a lot of crazy shit all the time. So yeah, he's a really good dude. But yeah, he liked it as well. Like we got out of there, like me, him, and Bob went to the comic book store and talked about it. And like he was just as pumped up as we were. He was not crying like we were. But he was just, you know, we were like amped up after we got out of there, you know. I really love the soundtrack. I thought the soundtrack was great. I was like, yes, please give me more of this, everything, my any 90s like angsty. And then she ran around in a Nine Inch Nails t-shirt the whole time. Like, you know, I was like living for that, right? Like
I actually saw that shirt the other day in Hot Topic.
You can buy it. It's all over the place right now. Yeah. Somewhere I've seen a bunch on Etsy with her star like onto next to the side of it or on the sleeve of it, and like but that's so awesome. Like
yeah, no,
awesome.
I'm wearing a new Captain Marvel shirt right now that I bought the other day. It's issue, I believe it's issue number 2, the We Can Do It.
Okay.
Cover.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
The Rosie and the Riveter.
Yeah, Rosie the Riveter. Yeah. And I got Bronwyn a shirt. We got like a lithograph from the Disney store. I got a stick, like all the Captain Marvel stuff is everywhere if you know where to look.
And, you know, to see, like, it was just, there was some really good stuff. Now, like I said, like, I was thrilled to see her running. I don't know. It was funny, though, because I have spoken to younger people that were like, we weren't sure what NIN meant. And I was like, sigh. But, you know, that's okay. Because now they know. Because now
they don't know.
Well, they don't know. They really don't know. They get.
They didn't live it, man.
No, they get sober. Trent,
they didn't ride the downward spiral.
I rolled the downward spiral. Aw. I mean, listen, I was born when Pretty Hate Machine came out, so I can't really talk too much. But I did grow up with that, and I've seen him 11 times.
All right, so, favorite Nine Inch Nails album, Jess?
Is Pretty Hate Machine, but my favorite song, I really, part of my language, I really love Starfuckers, and I really and I can relate to Every Day Is Exactly the Same a lot.
I am a big fan of The Downward Spiral, and I really love their Broken EP.
okay,
that one's got some really good tracks on it. And their Ghosts album, their instrumental stuff is really good as well.
Yeah, a lot of it, you know, but he's really good at that. That's something that he's excellent at. And, you know, I'm excited, you know, he's going to do The Watchmen on HBO right now. He's doing the soundtrack for that. So I'm pretty excited about that as well. You know, so anyway, but I digress into Nine Inch Nails. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Anyway, moving on back to Captain Marvel. It was lovely. I really liked it. I went immediately to read Meet the Scrolls after it. Like, I had to read. I was like, oh, I want to read this comic so bad. I really loved that whole aspect of it. I know people were upset about that as well. Oh my God, they changed something.
How dare they change?
You know, I just feel like, come on. Like, it worked really, I thought it worked perfectly with the story. So it wasn't like, we're just going to change this and it's going to be because we want to. It worked great with the story. You know, other people complained about them changing Captain, you know, what you call it, Mar-Vell to a woman. But I got that as well. It wasn't, I don't know. I didn't think that was that big of a deal.
Spoilers, it wasn't.
Yeah, exactly. It wasn't. And, you know, I think a lot of things that are being made a big deal really aren't a big deal and people are picking.
Yeah, but who's making a big deal out of them, really? Who are these people?
But again, I said this last week.
I've actually talked to people about this that were making a big deal out of it. I don't want to blow up their spot, but yes, I have in person had this argument.
Having a female mentor for Carol, when you've changed the origin just enough, it's still all there in the bits and pieces of it, but that her choice is her choice this time. She blows up the engine on purpose. She's not part of some accident.
Yeah.
Imbued with some man DNA, Kree or otherwise. It's her choice from a female mentor standpoint. Lovely. So the people who complained about it being Annette Bening, spoiler alerts, it's 2 weeks out, it's too late, sorry.
I already called spoilers way before.
Right. it's a thing where if you had tried to tell Mar-Vell's story, the movie would be 3 hours long, and then add Carol to it. If then you make the screen time available for Mar-Vell that is Wendy Lawson, people would complain just as much. You're doing short shrift to Mar-Vell. He's a bigger character than that. So you can't have it both ways. We have, in essence, Carol inhabiting Mar-Vell's arc at a certain point as a disaffected Kree soldier, as Wendy is, and that Mar-Vell. I thought it was a lovely way to blend everything kind of together. And for me, the Skrull stuff is Kelly Sue's second run. It's the planet Torfa. It's her little friend Tick and all that crazy stuff that goes on. Our screenwriters, the whole crew of them, they did some deep research here. They did some good work. And I'm all up for seeing it again with you, Jess.
Yeah, I totally go again. See, and a lot of movies, I won't go back. I don't really like the movie theater. Like, it's not really my thing. I'd rather watch a movie at home. I know we've talked about this before. Yeah. Like, I always, like, this time I got to sit next to Bob, but normally my life in a movie theater is sitting next to someone that does not shut up the entire time and is pissing me off. That's how it works.
I'm not a big fan of the movie-going experience either.
So if I'm willing to take myself back to the movie theater to watch it again, like, it's got to be pretty decent. It's got to be something that I can't wait for it to come out again. You know,
I might have missed my window to see it again. I really want to, if I go to the movies again, it's probably going to be to see Jordan Peele's Us comes out this weekend.
That looks really good.
Yeah. I heard it's very weird and I'm all for the weird.
Yeah. I'm in there. Give me weird on any day of the week.
So you liked Captain Marvel then?
I did. I did like Captain Marvel. Bully. I liked it a lot.
All right.
Go figure.
Go figure.
Right? Was that surprising?
Thought.
I hated it.
Did you enjoy Goose?
I love Goose. Goose is the best thing ever. I loved it. They're selling a goose stuffed animal
that you press its chest and the mouth opens up and the tendrils come flying out.
Is it like one of the evil pets? Because I have one of those. That's a cat.
It's exactly like an evil pet.
Yes, and it's so great. My niece gets so scared of it, and every time she's like, "Don't press it! Don't press it! Evil kitty! It's a kitty's evil."
Amazing. All right, my friend
Angela's daughter Diana, who we have spoken about twice now, loves cats, loves the whole idea of that there's a cat in this movie. And I had found in Target the sort of Barbie-sized Captain Marvel that came with the leather bomber jacket and a little goose.
Oh.
And she's apparently been walking around with that in her school lunch the school backpack for weeks.
Aww.
But now her mom took her to it, and she was a little concerned that, well, when that happened, she was going to get freaked out. She fell in love with the whole idea. Yeah. It's not only a cat, it's a Flurkin.
It
can
do
all this
Flurkin.
Other stuff. It's like, wow, this is even better, because now she's more in love with her, with Goose than before. So yeah, it's for everybody.
Yeah. I love right. Goose.
How about we read some of these listener questions that I forgot to read last week?
Oh, you mean the
or
Captain
the
Marvel
not
reactions.
Listener questions, the reactions. There you go. That's better. We edit the show down and stuff like that, but show was pushing about 4 hours worth of recording time last week.
It was a lot.
So we needed to go. But here they are. Joseph Montague is a little bit of a mixed bag. So Joseph Montague, it's a middle of the pack MCU movie for me, but that still makes it one hell of a flick. They played garbage people. How can it not be good? There you go. Kara says, unfortunately, the casting of Brie Larson diminished the impact of the character. Carol actually has emotions, going against what you were saying before, Jess. But the basis of the story and the character were there. Nothing was going to keep me from seeing this, and I was there 8 days after my mastectomy to support Carol.
Wow.
That's amazing. Carl, that's awesome.
Carl, best of luck to you.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Scott Tastrophe says, smart writing brings it all together for a fun origin story. Well acted, cool action, surprise twists, cameos, Samuel L. Jackson, Fury and only Fury. Looks young, but is 70 plus. His fighting skills look a bit slow. My only nitpick. Yeah, I can't wait to watch this movie again and see what everybody was talking about. John Burkle, our own John Burkle, says, smart writing, great pacing, wonderful twists, and Brie Larson was badass. Plus Stan Lee reading the script of Mallrats, brilliant. The MCU has a new captain to carry them into the next phase, or into phase four, rather. Carol Danvers, the real MVP, says, one of my favorite parts was towards the beginning where she's fighting the Skrulls. And one of the Skrulls screams, then she screams back and does a silly face, then kick their ass. I loved that part as well. It was one of my favorite parts of the movie. I LOL'd real hard at that part. And Grun says, the future of the MCU is in good hands. I happen to agree.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So those are all the ones that I found under our question to the audience. So there you go. Can't wait to see it again. Can't wait to own it and watch it 1,000 times. I can't wait to like bring it to Florida and watch it with my mom, or bring it home for Christmas and watch it with Bronwyn's mom, stuff like that. I think it's gonna make for a repeat watch in the Marvel universe in our house for sure. And I really, 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 really just can't wait. All right, so we're gonna go right to listener questions. How about it?
Oh,
sure.
Do you want to talk about the other thing? Do you want to do the news? Or not?
No.
or I'm gonna drop stuff. Sorry.
Use the news when we do the question that relates to the news, perhaps.
That is a good plan.
Look at that,
Bob, with the plans over here.
Yeah, I haven't had that much wine yet. It's nearly gone. That's
so we put out the call for listener questions, and we got some really great ones back. So thank you to everybody for jumping in. And remember that you can tweet us any questions you want, comic book related or otherwise. You can ask us some real life stuff, too, so long as it's not too invasive. If you want to know stuff about us from our pasts or whatever.
They don't want to know about us.
Sometimes you get some really fun questions that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But just tweet them at Talking Comics on Twitter. So our first question comes from Ron's76. If you could turn one hero from comics that's good into an evil character, who would it be? I will go first and quickly. I have one answer, and I chose Doctor Strange. I think Doctor Strange as a villain would be some serious business, yo. Like, he's master of the mystical arts and all that stuff. He knows spells up the wazoo. I would really hate to piss him off or have him become possessed or phoenixed or something. He would be a bad MF coming after you if he was a straight up villain, for sure. Yeah, so that's my answer, is Doctor Strange. Bob, what about you?
Here's the thing. I think we've seen every hero go bad and every villain go good at some point. So we've had a lot of that, but it's finding that, just as you're thinking, Steve, who'd be the biggest threat? I'm in the same bag as you are. Johnny Thunder and his Thunderbolt.
Ooh.
He's really mad because of this whole doomsday clock thing, and no one's paying attention. So he's this cranky old man in a nursing home who now calls on the Thunderbolt and just erases everything. It's like, yeah, ha, get off my lawn, will you? That's what I'm saying.
Speaking of lightning, I would not want to piss Thor off either.
Yeah. Bad Thor would be bad.
Yeah, if Thor went full
bad
villain,
that would be bad. But yeah, I was in the same boat as Bob. Like, I felt like there was so many. I'm like, oh, they already went bad. Like, that person was already bad. Like,
did you land on one?
Not really. Kind of. Like, I would still like to see more bad Squirrel Girl, because I just want evil squirrels like ruling the world. That's where I go in my mind. I'm like, the squirrels will take over. Like, I would like them to go farther with that, and more evil squirrels and extra squirrels, and maybe like the squirrel overlord. You know, like this is where my mind goes. Sorry, oh, not sorry. I'm not sorry.
Bob, jumping back to Squirrel Girl 42 real quick. That first panel in the future, when Tippy shows up, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, with Brain Drain.
Yeah, I totally thought that was Brain Drain. I'm like, what are they doing to Brain Drain? What happened? And then I realized that it was Tippy's brain in a jar.
Tippy, evil Tippy. Could you see evil Tippy with like a big...
No, evil Tippy.
I would read a one-shot of evil
I would
Tippy.
That's evil what
Tippy
I mean.
Looks
I was like
a black bow?
Exactly. Yeah. A black bow with a little skull in the middle, you know? Yes. Like, okay. Oh. This is where my brain goes. And that's what I was thinking, Steve, was what would I read? And that's what I would read, to be honest with you. You know?
We gotta get Ryan North on this show.
Please,
I'm gonna reach out to him.
Yes. Just like one issue where Tippy goes bad.
Yes. All right. Thoughts for later. We do have a 400th episode coming up this year, so maybe we'll plan something big. Maybe we can get land a real big fish for that one, or several fish, maybe a whole school. You don't know.
But by the way, Steve, speaking of 400, this should be an off the air thing, but I don't care. Because
he doesn't care.
It relates to before when Jess and I was at the movie slightly earlier than Jess was, cause I lived down the street, and there was a whole birthday party thing going on upstairs.
At yeah, you can have parties at this theater. That's
it's
right.
Only $300 if you have 27 people.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not bad.
And
really
before
bad,
that,
actually.
You get
they'll play
the
whatever
movie,
you want.
They get the movie and unlimited popcorn and soda. So it's basically pay to go to the movies and have lots of popcorn and soda.
Sure.
And so I was thinking maybe we should do a TC event.
Yeah, and they will play. We've asked because My nephew and Anthony's kids have all had birthday parties there. They will play whatever you want. They'll play what's current, but they'll, if you have like, I went for Andy Stewart. Do you know Andy Stewart that goes to the store?
I think I so by face, but
no,
not.
Bob, you don't know him, but Bob,
yeah, I'm sure
him.
I do.
We went for his birthday and we watched Empire. We watched Empire Strikes Back.
See, yeah. We'll talk.
We have promos in our theater that you can rent a theater to play Xbox. So you can get that big old Rocket League.
What would you play?
That. Are you kidding me? Like, yeah, I would play Katamari Damacy on a gigantic movie theater screen. That would be amazing.
I would be in Overwatch.
There you go. Yeah. Ooh.
I'd be in it.
All right. We ready to move on to another question?
Yes. Why not?
All right. Dominic Lindsay. Love the show. Here's a classic question. Really, really like this one a lot. If the presenters, the TC crew, were a creative team, who would be the writer, artist, colorer, letterer, and why? Plus, what genre would the team's first book be? Happy podcasting.
Ooh.
All right.
This is a good one. This is one of our best, I think.
I really, really dug this one. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, it was super easy to come up with these selections. Should I go first?
Sure. Yes.
All right. So I expanded on the jobs a little bit to get everybody in here, because I think that if anything, we have demonstrated that we're a very collaborative podcast. So we have some double bills going on. Co-writers of our first comic would be Joey and Sarah together. Jess would be our artist. I would be doing colors and letters, and our director of the book and overall editor would be Bob.
That's so funny.
What?
Because that's exactly pretty much what I said.
Yeah, I'm sort of both.
Is that what everybody has?
Nearly so, yeah.
Bob would be director, editor, chief.
Yeah. Totally.
Yeah, you know, Bob, like saying... I had me and you doing all the things, because I don't know, I think you may, I see, I put you as artist, as me and as letters and colors. That's the only swap that I have.
Oh, I'm artist on your book?
Yeah, well, I think we're, I don't, but that's the thing. I think we could probably do all three of the things.
I could probably do backups, but you would do the main book.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you.
I would think.
See, and I thought it the other way around. I was like, I could probably help him out, but I...
So just
I threw myself as editor, right? Writers, again, Joey and Sarah. You are Jess and Steve, colors and letters. Now, what book are we doing?
Oh, okay. I have us doing a slice of life superhero drama.
This is awesome.
Think Ms. Marvel and her friends meets Giant Days.
Okay. Okay. Now, literally, my first line is a slice of life. A slice of life post-apocalyptic superhero horror comedy about corgis, dragons, and Skrulls.
All right, you ready? You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. So I said, I have no clue what genre it would actually be, because we're all so different, but we all like the same things, but we don't like the same things, but we do like the same things. So it'd be hard
exactly.
to choose. So I said it would be a fantasy horror superhero crime noir children's book with dogs and Lovecraftian themes. That's what I
heard. All brilliant ideas. We need to get to work.
I want to see this book.
I love that we all wrote this.
It's the same thing, in essence. I love it. See, it's why we get along. So.
I'm glad that I got chosen for color all around. That's fun.
Well, I've got your
art. Actually, I have you for writing as well, too, because I was like, oh, well, Steve writes every day. Like, I had, like,
boy,
I was like... Yeah, but that's the thing. Like, I was like, this is hard. Like, this is real hard. Like, I'm like, because we could really kind of, I'm not writing anything. I don't want to write anything. but I will color and draw and put letters all over the place, wherever you want them.
All right.
And I'll be Stan. I'll just say Excelsior. That's what, that's,
Bob will be like, no, I don't like that. That's what I could
do. You are the TC spokesperson for sure. If we had one, you would be it. All right. We got another one. This one comes from Jason. I just started reading comics last year. What are some older books you would recommend? I read Mr. Miracle, I Kill Giants, and Squirrel Girl based on your year-end best of episodes, and those were all great. Of course they were. What are some classics I haven't heard of? Okay. I don't know if you haven't heard of these, but if you haven't read them, I strongly suggest that you do. I have a bit of a list here, so I'm just going to rattle them off for you, and we'll go around the room and see what everybody says. Mm-hmm. Bronwyn, one of the ladies of Valhalla, my wife, says that you should definitely read Death Vigil. Death Vigil, for sure. My list is as follows. Tom King's Vision. Absolutely read Tom King's Vision. Jason Aaron's Thor. Start, if you really want to do it right, start with the God of Thunder and just go from there into the Jane Foster Thor stuff and then to her end and beyond. But if you really want to do it properly, it is a good idea to start with the God Killer. What was it? The God Killer or God Slayer?
God Slayer.
God Slayer.
God Slayer. Regardless, Jason Aaron, God of Thunder, Volume 1, start at the beginning, because it's epic all the way through. I also have Saga, Motor Girl, Clean Room is a great one. Joe the Barbarian, I think, is an absolute must. Hawkeye, either Matt Fraction's or Kelly Thompson's, both preferably. From Valiant, the death-defying Dr. Mirage.
Ooh, yeah, that was very good, yeah.
Yeah, that's something that I come back to and remember fondly. Doom Patrol from Young Animal is a really fun read. Grizzly Shark, if you want something silly and ridiculous and fun and violent, Grizzly Shark has got you covered. We mentioned it earlier in the show, House of Penance from Peter J. Tomasi and Ian Bertram is absolutely fantastic. Kind of like a spin on the Winchester House and so some good. Like weird Cronenbergian madness going on in there.
A book apparently better than the movie.
Yes. And really quick, I also have Nailbiter, Joshua Williamson's Nailbiter.
Yeah.
Dan Slott, Silver Surfer, Wolverine and the X-Men, Superior Foes of Spider-Man, and if you really want to cry, Spider-Man Blue. Definitely read Spider-Man Blue.
I'm just about to say the last line, and I won't. Because it'll wreck me if I say on the air.
Jess, do you have any book
what was that?
Yeah.
I was going to say Bob, but I want to give Jess a chance to go first.
Bob Moran.
Okay, anyway, we're going to stop that right there. Again, I have Saga. Always Saga. Read Saga. I love Saga. It's great. I have Paper Girls. If you like Squirrel Girl, Miss Marvel, you should read Miss Marvel. Read Miss Marvel. We love Miss Marvel. Mm-hmm. Deadly Class. I hate Fairyland if you want something that's a little different. I hate Fairyland. Sex Criminals. I loved Sex Criminals. Sex Criminals was great. If you want to read some Batman, some of the ones that are, you know, read The Dark Knight Returns, Court of Owls, Long Halloween, and Tom King's run thus far. Anything that Gail Simone has written, pretty much, but her Batgirl is amazing. Kelly Sue DeConnick's Captain Marvel, we talk about all the time. Bitch Planet. If you want something that's going to take up time, the Walking Dead comics are actually really good. They're really good. I used to love Fables as well. I know that was some of the first that I started to read. That's, again, there's a lot in that series. I'm currently loving that book, Hexwives. If you haven't, I think, you know, everyone should at least read Watchmen once. And I think I'm going to speak for Joey and say The Wicked and Divine. If he was here, he would say The Wicked and Divine. I think that's, yeah, and that's, you know, I mean, I'm sure I have more that I didn't write in this list, but there, yeah, those are some definites. Saga, go with Saga, though. I'm really, yeah, if you haven't read Saga.
Especially, Saga, catch up before it comes back. So if you want to, like, you know, you have a little bit less than a year to go and read 1 through 54, highly, highly recommend that you do so. Bob, how about you? What's your list?
Well, since we mentioned Joey, I'll throw one in that he might have mentioned if he were Puka!
Puka!
A.K.A. Hellcat, which with Kate Leth, Brittany Williams was just lovely in its time. Going back, I'm going way back to some oddball things. You guys have mentioned too many things I'd have mentioned as well. So I'm glad I made a different kind of list. Some of these will cost you money, and I apologize, but there are ways to read them online that you didn't hear me say that. But anyway, if you want to know where superheroines start, there are two lovely collections of Miss Fury, curated by friend of the podcast, Trina Robbins, and done by Tarpe Mills, a artist-writer. In her time back in the 40s, that was kind of rare, though there were plenty of female writers and or artists in comics then, but except for maybe Dale Messick, who created Brenda Starr, that was about it. And Miss Fury starts a lot of things. It's an adventure strip in the way that Tearing the Pirates or Dick Tracy or Flash Gordon was, with a female protagonist who's the first costume superheroine. It's 1941. So, Miss Fury. And they're around, and there are reprints of all sorts. Coming up soon after that, from 1949, I'm going to do this as chronologically as I can. It's what is thought of as the first modern graphic novel. I've spoken about it on the show once, many, many months back. It's written by Arnold Drake, who's the creator of the Doom Patrol and would work on the X-Men years later, and his partner, Leslie Wallace, with art by Matt Baker, who is one of the great artists of the good girl art style, but worked at Marvel and Fox and all the other companies. And it's a book called It Rhymes with Lust. And it, if you like the Ed Brubaker crime film noir sort of stuff, this was written at the time that those kind of movies were coming out. And Dark Horse has reprinted in a lovely little sort of paperback edition. It's a town where things are run by an evil, evil overlord, and she is not a nice person. And things go in a lot of different ways. The art is sensational. It's black and white line art in a very crime novel kind of sense. So that's called It Rhymes with Lust. Moving into the 70s, and this one's pricey. And I'm sorry, because when I wrote an article about this for Talking Comics for a couple of Halloweens ago, there was a little company called Skywalt in the early 70s. It was, they did horror magazines, and they did Psycho, Nightmare, and Scream. And their initial editor was Saul Brodsky. He left to go back to Marvel because, well, at least that was safe. A fellow named Alan Hewitson took over and wrote this nihilistic story in five parts in Scream called The Saga of the Victims, about these two young ladies, Josie Foster and Ann Adams. Again, you're in these sort of, it's the horror mood, they called it. Things were never going to go well for these two ladies. They're going to school. They get kidnapped out of the building. They fight their way out, come back up into the streets of New York, and the whole place is taken over by monsters. And it turns out it's some sort of weird testing thing. Through the course of the five issues, they are never victims. It is, the artwork is brilliantly detailed, black and white sort of stuff, lots of mood, powerful lead characters in an era where there weren't a lot of female leads doing what they did here, and long out of print, except a little company in England called Head Press in 2003 decided, well, those guys never got to finish their story. They did five issues, and the sixth issue never came out because the company went out of business. They reprinted the first five, commissioned Alan Hewitson, and I'm going to mispronounce this fellow's name horribly, 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 Jesus Suso Peñarrego, who did the artwork. And it was reprinted, the first five and this new one, in a lovely edition that I bought for about $20 when I was researching the article I wrote. Well, now on ABE Books, it goes for up to $500.
Whoa.
Amazon second seller is about 45. Even Amazon UK, it's £33. It can be read online if you're inventive. And you may want to post a link, Steve, if you can, to my little bits and pieces. I'd post you the artwork, but I lost our little chat. It went off my screen. It is highly detailed in the sort of Gray Morrow style that you saw in Creepy and Eerie. And with two stunning female leads, I mean, really great stuff. And so that's Saga of the Victims. Finally, I'll move into like years where there's a two in front of it, just to be different.
How many more leads do you have?
Just one.
Okay.
It's by Posey Simmons. It's from 2005, and it's called Tamara Drew.
Oh yes.
And I know Steve knows the movie. Mm-hmm. The graphic novel, which is usually a series of strips from The Guardian, are an absolutely wonderful story of a woman coming of age, finding herself. She has agency. It isn't always, going the right direction. It is a stunning book, and the movie adaptation by Stephen Frears in 2010 is absolutely a wonderful recreation of the movie. You should read the book and then see the movie, which stars Gemma Arterton. That's it. I'm done.
All right. So there you go, Jason. Go and buy and read all of these. And then
get back to us.
There'll be a quiz at the end.
But you have to read all of them.
Bob has a quiz waiting.
Yes. We'll know if you didn't. All right. We have another question. This one comes from Robin. Your top three heroes, and what should be the theme song for each? Also,
what would you like to have your theme song be and play every time you enter a room, look up at someone from your books, etc.? Jess, why don't you go first?
Sure. We had a lot of fun with this. I at first was struggling with this. I really was. And I brought it to the girls. I said, ladies, I said, I need to brainstorm. I need a little think tank. And they did. And it got weird, as it always does. For some reason, our conversations get weird, but it really worked. By the way, I already have a theme song. It's called Jessica. And it was written by the Allman Brothers. And it was also the Top Gear theme song for a long time, which I love Cars. So that's a side note. But that's a joke. That's more of a joke. It's not really, but it's my name. This took me down some weird, strange, like, female empowerment song hole. I'm not going to lie. but I really thought that it would be cool that if every time I opened a door, the beginning to Hole's Celebrity Skin just started to play. I had that in my brain for a little bit, and maybe like some Bjork, maybe a little Army of Me going as I when I'm a little bit darker. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, those are my themes. So maybe they can interchange with each other. As for like top three heroes, this is where it got weird. As we started to, I don't know if they're my top three heroes, but we then started to find songs for every hero under the sun. I would really like to see all the Marvel Rising girls walk into Who Run the World Girls by Beyonce. Okay, that's what I would like to see. Nice. And then all of the Birds of Prey walk into Cherry Bomb.
Yeah.
I already got to see Captain Marvel fight to I'm Just a Girl, so that happened. I have a couple. You want me to give a couple, or you want me to just do three?
No.
Go for it.
So, Catwoman, Black Cat by Janet Jackson. Mr. Freeze was Cold Hearted Snake by Paula Abdul.
Oh, yes.
Harley Quinn was Bad Reputation by Joan Jett. Your wife has another one that's just as equally funny. I told you it got weird.
I was a big straight up, no fooling around. I was quite my sister was big into Paula Abdul. And
it was that time. And it was that time. I loved me for all of it. Me forever.
Oh. All right.
Okay.
What else do you got?
What else do I have? I put Miss Marvel for The Middle by Jimmy Eat World. Think about the words to that song.
I'm not familiar with that song.
Oh, you'll know it if you heard it. Trust me, it was one of those that's been played plenty of times. You'd know it if you heard it.
Wasn't that the beginning of Malcolm in the Middle?
I didn't watch Malcolm in the Middle. I have no idea. So I can't tell that. I don't know.
I've seen like two episodes of the damn show.
If you go and look at the words to the song To the Middle by Jimmy Eat World, it is very much Miss Marvel, and I think it fits her very well. Okay. What else? Oh, Batman is Back in Black by AC/DC. Did I miss any? Oh, I think those are all that I wrote down for this time.
I'll go next. Thank you very much for all of those creative choices. All right, so I think I've answered this question before. Maybe we had it several years ago, but my answer is still the same for like my personal theme song. I absolutely love the opening riff to the song Jombie by Tool. If you've never heard it, imagine me like walking, like rolling up into a room and you hear this. Hold on a second.
I know this one.
Yeah!
It's
fucking on now.
I love it.
It's an amazing song. So that would be my theme song. And then, so I chose my three favorite characters, and I have added a character to my third slot. This is a brand new character in the third slot. So wait for it. My first character and favorite character, of course, is Barbara Thorson of I Kill Giants. And after hemming and hawing over what song I would assign to her, I arrived at a very bizarre place because I don't own any Ramones. I don't listen to the Ramones. I enjoy the Ramones when I hear them, but I've never like explored them or researched them or anything like that. But I think if Barbara like rolled onto the scene with her giant hammer and was ready to beat some giant ass, the Ramones Blitzkrieg Bop. Like I could totally see an animated version, kind of like a Fooly Cooly version of I Kill Giants to that song. I think that would be great. So next I have, of course, Valeria Richards, and that would be the song Stars by the band Hum. Jess, are you familiar?
I'm not.
All right, let me play you a little something right here. Starts off nice and sweet like she is, but she's also mean.
All right, I'm in.
Yeah. They're like a heavy fuzz rock band from back in the day. I can't stop it. I love that song, and the lyrics, I think, match some of her personality traits, stuff like that. And the song just rocks. So they're a band that's all about space and math and all of those things and science. And those are all things that I associate with Valeria. And now for my third character and third choice would be Doreen Green.
Ooh,
Squirrel Girl. And I don't need to assign her a song because she already has her own theme song. Which is the Spider-Man
Squirrel.
Theme.
Play it!
Squirrel Girl!
Play it.
But with Squirrel Girl works instead.
Well, that's what I was thinking about with Spider-Man, because didn't the Ramones do a Spider-Man cover of the song?
Yes. Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl.
Powers of Both, Squirrel and Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a band that wrote a song called Squirrel. I put in Squirrel Girl lyrics, and apparently there's a band called What Moon.
Oh, go to YouTube, because I sent a link to the Ladies of Valhalla when they did their Squirrel Girl show of a father and daughter and mom doing the Squirrel Girl theme, singing it with video to go with it.
I unfortunately cannot hold. I can't. I'm on the laptop. I can't open this up.
Jess will send it to you. I'll send it to you. We'll figure it out.
Oh, here we go. Squirrel Girl. Squirrel Girl. She's a human and also a squirrel.
Squirrel.
She can climb up a tree. Yes, she can easily. Anyway.
Yeah.
That's why her name is Squirrel Girl.
Squirrel Girl.
Is a whole thing. I don't really know the Spider-Man theme song, to be honest with you. I've kind of not sung it in several years, so I totally biffed that one. But whatever. All right, Bob, you promised that you'd bring down the house if you went last.
Okay, so I'm going to go last. My theme will be last for that reason. So I'm going to go 1-3. My favorite superhero character is Ben Grimm, the Thing. So if we were doing a WWE thing and he was wandering into the ring, you'd play It's Your Thing by the Isley Brothers. But, that's pretty obvious. But as a theme, Simon and Garfunkel's I Am a Rock. A winter's day in a deep and dark December, I am alone, gazing from my window to the streets below on a freshly fallen silent shroud of snow. I am a rock. I am an island. For Benji, right?
That song from the car commercial.
Yeah, no.
Like a rock.
No, I wasn't going there.
Like a rock. No. I hate that so much.
My second favorite character is Captain America. Now, he has themes. He has when Captain America throws his mighty shield from back in the 60s, which we've heard. He has the Star-Spangled Man with the Plan from the first Avenger, and they're great. They're both great. But what would Steve Rogers want for his theme?
Ooh.
And for me, people know this song. This Land Is Your Land.
This land is my land. That's right.
Right. But Woody Guthrie wrote that in the 1940s as a reaction to he was gosh darn tired of hearing God Bless America by Kate Smith. When the country in the early 40s, when he wrote it, was still suffering through the end of the Depression. Economic inequality was a problem then. So the song is a protest song, the same way that Springsteen's Born in the USA isn't about what people want to grab to. It's about something different. for instance, in 1940, when Woody Guthrie wrote that song that you were singing so wonderfully, Jess, one of the verses that he used to sing but didn't always turn up when other people sang it was, "A high wall there that tried to stop me. A sign was painted, said private property, but on the backside it didn't say nothing. This land was made for you and me."
Oof.
Yeah. So Steve Rogers, the guy who, yes, he believes in the American ideal, but not maybe where everything goes all the time, I think would totally embrace Woody Guthrie's version of "This Land Is Your Land."
Hmm.
So there
this
you
land
go.
"Is my land. Your land is quicksand. I got a shotgun."
Oh my God,
from being a kid. Remember that?
Yes, from being a kid, yes. I also do remember learning "This Land Is Your Land, This Land Is My Land." I remember singing it like when I was a kid. I think I know most of the words too, which is so scary.
Well, they're right in front of me. I could text them over to you.
You, no. You want to harmonize?
I don't text, yeah, but they're, yeah. finally, for the heroes part of this, my third favorite character is Susan Storm Richards. And I was thinking of a whole lot of stuff, but thinking of her power set and all she's gone through over the various years and various incarnations, Pat Benatar, hit me with your
yes!
best.
Yes!
Sweet. That's awesome.
Yes, Bob. Sorry. Yeah. You got me really excited. I didn't mean to cut you off.
That's okay. No, there's nothing more to say than Pat Benatar, hit me with your best shot.
Hit me with your best shot.
Dear near, dear
near. Fire away. You're a real tough cookie with... I know every word
long
to that
history.
Song, okay?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Break little, like the one in me. Okay, anyway. Stop.
All right, we've got one more here as far as listener questions.
Oh, I don't get to say my own theme? Okay, fine, I won't.
Oh, I'm sorry, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay,
I thought you said that first.
No, I was going to say that last because this is what's going to... You're going to need the next question to fix what I'm going to do here. I'm in a you know... If it were just we're playing a riff or something, it could be the theme from Shaft or, I don't know, Eruption from Van Halen or something like that, or the beginning of I Hate Myself for Loving You. You know, it could be all sorts of things. But I don't know. September song, "It's a Long Way from May to December." We have that. But I don't want to go too down with this. How about... "It Was a Very Good Year." "But now the days are short. I'm in the autumn of the year. And now I think of my life as vintage wine from fine old kegs." I'm sorry, I'm old.
Don't make me cry. Yeah, but you're not that old.
Yes,
oh, Bob. You can't break out Frank Sinatra. And
Yes, I can. Look, I could have brought out the old Four Tops song, "Yesterday's Dreams," that ends
Stop!
With "Yesterday's dreams are a small pile of ashes with one fern pole that hangs on."
Oh my
on.
God!
Jesus! All right. So, what are you doing tomorrow? We
bring
obviously
down
need...
the house. Yeah. I didn't know you were gonna bring down
like, the house.
I told you.
Me.
I warned you. I warned you.
Oh God.
Okay, we're having fun though, right?
All right, let's.
Oh my God, Bob!
Are you good?
Tears.
Can we back off the ledge a little bit?
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Excellent. So, thank you very much for all of your answers.
You're welcome.
Except for Bob's. All right. We have. Oh no, I lost my. Would you see? Now look at what you made me do.
I'm totally off now. I'm like tearing up, like thinking of Bob being
Sean
old.
Sean says, "Hey everyone."
I could have been white snake. Here I go again on my own, but I didn't use that.
Oh my God!
Oh God! Stop it. "Hey everyone, loving the show as always. Question is, we already knew about Black Hammer being in the works for multiple film and TV adaptations. With news from last week of the Justice League Black Hammer crossover, we'll get to that in a second, I'd be interested to hear your dream casting for any and all characters involved." All right, so... I did have the story up, and then I went to go and see... Okay. "One of comics' This is from The Hollywood Reporter, by the way. "One of comics' most exciting new superhero universes is about to collide with the original superhero universe, with Dark Horse Comics partnering with DC for a Black Hammer Justice League comic book. The 5-issue series, Black Hammer Justice League Hammer of Justice, will be written by Black Hammer co-creator and former Justice League United writer Jeff Lemire, with art from Michael Walsh, and feature the heroes of both DC and Black Hammer universes having to deal with the arrival of a mysterious stranger and the warping of reality and the mind-controlling threat known as Starro. So that is coming out this summer from Dark Horse and DC and Jeff Lemire and Michael Walsh. I will be reading that. So
who plays Starro? That's what I want to know.
Probably a CG.
Oh, come on.
Creature, or they can
Zach
hire
Galifianakis should play Starro. That's what I'm saying. That's all I got for this question, but I think he should play Starro.
Okay.
He could do it. It's a stretch, but he could do it.
All right, so neither of you have answers, correct?
No.
You don't like my answer?
I think your answer is fantastic, actually.
I can't. He's killing me tonight. I'm sorry.
All right. So should I just go?
Go.
Yeah.
All right. So I really like some of the people that are cast in these roles, so I kept a few of them for the Justice League. But anyway, for Batman, I would actually choose Oscar Isaac. I would like a Guatemalan Batman, if you will. Ooh. I think he would do a fine job. Mix it up a little bit. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. It'll be all right.
Not the jawline. He definitely.
No, he does. Like, look,
I think
help.
he's got the Bruce Wayne swagger.
Yeah.
And Robbie he's got range. I think he could do it. I really, if they gave him the chance, I think he could do it. I don't know how tall he is. They might have to do something about that. But other than that,
put lifts in his boots and it's good.
Yeah, it's fine.
There you go.
Yeah. They can do everything else with CG.
I mean, they're doing so many different castings and they're gender swapping roles and whatnot. So get a Guatemalan Batman going on.
I could see him in the Batsuit right now, and I'm okay with that. I am okay with that.
Yeah. So there you go.
Great choice.
For Wonder Woman, I will choose Gal Gadot because I think she is a wonderful Wonder Woman. I would keep her. I really liked Tyler Hoechlin as Superman
on Supergirl. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think have him be Superman, I think, would be excellent.
I'm going to jump in a second real quick. Yeah. Did you see Supergirl this week with John Cryer as Lex Luthor?
No, Bob, I'm so far behind.
Oh, he was really good.
I heard that. I heard that from a couple people that he was really good. I'm looking forward to catching up one of these days. We're making our way through Deadly Class right now after doing our rewatch and Bronwyn's first watch of Parks and Recreation.
Yeah!
We finished it last night. Tears.
Treat yourself.
Tears. Treat yourself.
Treat yourself.
All right.
To jump in. Just that ass. Go ahead.
All right. Moving on. For Cyborg, I have Michael B. Jordan as Cyborg. I think he would be a killer Cyborg. I'm keeping Momoa as Aquaman because I like Momoa Man. I think he's a lot of fun. I would cast Nicholas Holt as the Flash. He was Nux in Fury Road. All right, so here we go. Here we're getting into the Black Hammer casting now. For Colonel Randall Weird, I have being played by Steve Buscemi.
Well, Weird and Buscemi, yes.
Absolutely. Yes, there you go. Okay. I don't even know, but I know.
So for Walkie Talkie, I would have Alan Tudyk doing the voice, because he's doing the voice for literally every animated character or CGI character ever created from, like, 2015 on.
Well, since he bit the dust in Serenity, right?
Yeah, yes. they kill him with a pole and that.
Yes. For Madame Dragonfly, I have Aubrey Plaza after watching her stellar performance in Legion.
So good.
For Barbalian, I have Lance Reddick. Lance Reddick was the voice of the character Silence in Horizon Zero Dawn. And he's also been in, like, a ton of sci-fi shows. He's a really deep voice. And he talks very deliberately, like, insurance and disc jockey and things like that. So
look at J.K. Simmons. He does insurance.
I should have brought up his IMDb page. He's a really great actor. Okay. He's in more things than you'd think. Like, if I showed you a picture, you'd be like, oh, right, that guy.
That guy. I love guys like that.
I believe he was in Fringe for several seasons. He hangs around the sci-fi stuff quite a bit. For Abraham Slam, I have Nick Offerman.
I think if they beefed him up a little bit. What was that, Jess?
Well, I said you can put him in anything. He's fabulous.
Yeah. And
is Fassbender in this, by the way?
For me, no.
Okay.
No, he could be Abraham Slam, but they'd have to age him up a little bit.
Gotcha.
So for my final character, Golden Gale, I have McKenna Grace, who was the little girl in The House on Haunted Hill The Haunting of Hill House on Netflix.
Okay.
Oh, she's in something else, though.
Yeah, wait, she was just in something else.
Oh, I know. I gotta go look it up.
Yeah, I gotta go look it up. And I love Bob's idea of having Zach Galifianakis as Starro.
Why not?
That's fantastic. So,
but we won't tell anybody he's in it.
Right. All right, so speaking of movies, I might
McKenna Grace is in Captain Marvel.
There you go. That's what I'm like. She's just in
she's
something.
Little Carol.
She's Little Carol. I'm like, saw her in something. There you go.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's cool.
Thank you, Bob, for that.
Yeah.
So while we're talking about movies, I am going to do a shameless plug real quick because I work real hard on it. But my coverage from when I went to Leica Studios a couple weeks back and saw the set of Missing Link in theaters April 12th is up now.
Oh,
on,
I gotta watch. Oh,
com.
Yeah.
What's up?
I gotta read that.
Yeah, I'll put a link to it in the show notes. I had a really fun time going there. I had a really fun time writing it, and it's a really, if I do say so myself, it is a very detailed description of what the tour was like. I try to bring you as close to the experience as possible. And the photos that I took are
great. No,
awesome.
I looked. They were great, Steve. They were wonderful. I was like,
they were good,
ooh,
right?
I was going to ask you if you took them, to be honest with
yes,
you.
Yes, no,
because I'm like,
all the photos, with the exception of the top image of Link,
well,
those
yeah.
are all mine.
But because so many times I've read articles, like, you know what I mean? Not your articles, really, but like other articles, and you're like, who's taking this on a potato? Like, why? Like, you know? Like,
I won't say who it is, but I saw another outlet because everybody releases their coverage at the same time when the embargo is up. And I saw like somebody's main photo for like, here, click here and look at our tour. And I was just like, are you kidding me? Like, this is your primary image to get people through the door? You gotta be kidding. Anyway, I won't name names, but woof.
Those guys.
Yeah.
No, really. Sometimes I'm like, did you take this on a potato? Did you go there and hold a potato up and take a picture? Like, what? Did you take this on like a 2000s Nextel? Like, what is this? Like,
they want us to get right in there. Like, I got to handle some of the puppets and everything like that. They're very heavy. They're very heavy. They sent us home with gift bags. I got chocolates. I got cookies.
Wow.
I got T-shirts. I got a tote bag. I got a figurine that is of Link, and he's in like the classic Sasquatch pose, like that like hands at the sides, walking through and looking at the camera. That classic Bigfoot
Roger,
image.
The Roger Patterson footage.
Yeah, so like he's in that position, walking around on a little stand that I have that they gave to us, and yeah, I mean. With the exception of the flights and being up for over 48 hours on the way home, the trip was an absolute blast. And you can read all about it in the article. Like I said, I've been posting it to my social media stuff, and I'll post a link to it in the show notes as well. So it's about that time that we talk about what books we're looking forward to this week. And boy, oh boy, it is a very, very, very... very, very large week for some of us. I don't know what I'm going to do. I really don't know what I'm going to do. I'm kind of afraid of my impulse buying for this week. All right.
We'll try not to make it worse.
Well, Bob, why don't you give us your list first?
Okay. Aquaman 46 by Kelly Sue DeConnick. We've got Batman 67. I think it's coming because Dynamite's weird with those things. Elvira, The Shape of Elvira. Captain Marvel 3. We have the penultimate issue of West Coast Avengers and Jeff the Baby Landshark.
Yeah.
And, well, I'm getting the crowded trade this week, but there's another trade that's coming. It's Sunstone Volume 6. So, that's it.
Oh boy, Bob, you're getting off light. Jess, how about yours?
I have a bunch of the same thing that Bob was getting. So I'm also going to grab the Crowded trade paperback because why would I not? Yes. Farmhand number 6 comes out. Middle West number 5 comes out. Outpost Zero number 8 comes out. There is a Jurassic Park adult coloring book that will come home with me because I need to color dinosaurs. High Level number 2. I'm also on for Batman number 67, Aquaman number 46, Captain Marvel number 3. Like you said, some Jeff the Shark, which I'm going to call Jeff the Shark from now on. Venom number 12 and Rainbow Bright number 5.
Were you not going, I thought you said that you were going trade waiting for Batman.
Okay, so I'm still buying them and I'm just reading them at like 4 or 5 at a clip. Shh. I can't wait that long. All right, you're right. You were right. You were right. I can't wait that long, but I like to do like 6 at a clip. I think that's a good.
So you haven't read the newest Batman?
Nope. Don't tell me about it.
Oh, the latest issue was very good.
I've heard. You shut your dirty mouth.
You shut your mouth.
You shut it.
They're talking smack about issue 75 being a monster anniversary issue with big important stuff happening.
Yeah, I've seen things on the interwebs.
I've seen things.
All right, I am a little bit surprised that nobody had my number one book of the week on their list. Maybe y'all don't know, but there we go with the y'all again. What the hell?
Oh,
y'all.
I want to go look down some.
This needs to stop. I need to stop myself. Invisible Kingdom, number 1. Anybody?
No, I didn't even see that.
Christian Ward and
G. Willow Wilson.
Oh, no. I that's coming out this week? I remember seeing... I'll pick it up too. Thanks, Steve.
I'm not done yet.
Yeah, you're going to kill me.
I got a big old list. You ready? Nobody add this up in your head. Don't do it because I don't
want to. I'm starting now that you said it. Okay.
I like to be surprised.
So I'll tell you.
I see that title and I'm like, oh boy. All right. So Invisible Kingdom number 1, Aquaman number 46, Batman number 67, Naomi number 3, Harrow County Library Edition. Volume 2 drops tomorrow. Crowded, Volume 1, also drops tomorrow, or today, if you're listening to this on a Wednesday. Bitterroot, number 5, Farmhand, number 6, Middle West, number 5, Monstrous, number 21, Sunstone, Volume 6, that X-Men Nightcrawler, Shauna Maguire book that was real good, Captain Marvel, number 3, Guardians of the Galaxy, number 3, Meet the Skrulls number 2 apparently drops this week as well.
Could be.
I didn't see that, but
I saw it on one list, but not on another.
All right, I saw it on comiclist.com. They're usually pretty good.
Yeah.
We'll find out. Spider-Man Life Story number 1, Chip Zdarsky's new Spider-Man. Thor number 11, Uncanny X-Men number 14, and Venom number 12. We're talking well over $100 a day.
I think you're like $125.
Yeah, I don't.
Because of that big hardcover, though.
Yeah,
the Harrow County.
I don't know that
over.
All this is going to happen. And plus, we still have some of that gift card left.
Well, that helps.
Or store credit, rather. Yeah, we'll see. I don't know. I got to share some of that with Bronwyn. I've kind of gone through a couple $100.
Yeah, you should maybe let her pick a couple, you know.
I have picked up some stuff with her in mind that I knew she would enjoy. So it hasn't been all about me, just mostly me.
What does Steve say to? Isn't it all about you? With Steve Rogers says to Tony Stark.
And we share everything, so it's all
good. There you go.
It's all good. Okay. So does I feel like I'm forgetting something? But I don't know. Does anybody have any closing statements?
Yeah, I apologize for the amount that I sing in this episode. I'm very sorry.
Awesome.
I'm very sorry for all this.
Never apologize for that.
I'm apologizing.
Worse.
There was a lot of this week.
Jess, much, much worse. I sang on this episode. So there you go.
There you go.
Joey's probably dying on the inside.
Yes, he's like, no singing today. I'm not here.
He'll be back next week with songs from Solomon Grundy, the one-man show.
Oh, I can't wait to hear about it. I can't wait. All right. We've reached the end of this week's edition of the Talking Comics podcast. As always, you can send us your comments or questions through our email, podcast@talkingcomicbooks.com. We are also on Twitter @TalkingComics. And don't forget to check out talkingcomicbooks.com for reviews from our fantastic contributors. And don't forget to check out Talking Valiant, D&D Adventure, Ben is Assembled, and the Ladies of Valhalla podcast. Bob,
Where can our listeners find you?
Bob Ryer at talkingcomicbooks.com on the old-fashioned email.
And Jessica.
Steve. You can find me at Jarska on all of the things.
Hitting the highs and the lows with
exactly.
That one.
Oh, you'd enjoy that.
I am at dead_anchorus on Twitter and Instagram. So for Bob.
Happy new comic book day.
For Jess.
I apologize again.
And for me, Joey, can't wait for you to come back next week. We love you, buddy. Congratulations. Best news ever. We'll catch you next time on the Talking Comics podcast. Be excellent to each other. To be continued.